Hi, this is Dr. Michael Winnick. I would like to welcome you to the first podcast of the Stark County Dental Society, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, with Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn.
When you were a cardiac surgeon, and you took your shingle and hanging out in rural China, the Papua Highlands in Guinea, Central Africa, the Taj Mahal in northern Mexico, okay, you're not going to find any cardiovascular disease there. Why? Because our culture, heritage, and tradition, they thrive on plant-based nutrition. On the other hand, I did spend a year in Vietnam as a combat surgeon, and I keep this slide to remind you to share with the audience that if you autopsy our GIs who died in Korea at an average age of 20, 80% had gross evidence of coronary disease you could see without a microscope. Not enough for their cardiac event yet. But there it is, the disease is already established. Now, the interesting thing is that study was then repeated 45 years later, in 1999. This time looking at young women and men who have died between the ages of 17 and 34, have died because of accidents, homicides, and suicides. Now the disease is ubiquitous. In this country, you graduate from high school, you get a diploma, and you also get the foundation for coronary disease. Now, 4 years ago in Los Angeles, when I was moderating a panel, one of the panel members was Lou Keller. And Lou Keller is the professor of public health at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. And on that panel that day, as a result of his 10-year cardiovascular health study, Lou Keller made the following statement. All males who are 65 and all females who are 70 who have been exposed to the traditional Western diet have cardiovascular disease and should be treated as such. Now, it's interesting. Here was a chance for us to get it right. But we blew it. This is World War II. We call it the Axis powers of Germany overran the low countries of Holland and Belgium. They occupied Norway and Denmark. And it was characteristic that the Germans would take away the livestock for their troops. Their cattle, their sheep, their goats, their pigs, their chickens, their turkeys, gone. So suddenly now, these Western European nations were plant-based. And in 1951, in England's leading medical journal, The Lancet, Drs. Strong and Jansen looked up in Norway the deaths from heart attack and stroke during this time period. So let's start together here on the left. You can see 1927, stroke and heart attack going up, 1930 going up, 35 going up, 1939, whoop, 40, whoop, 41. Who knew these Germans were these great public health educators? But look what happened in 1945 with the death of Adolf Hitler, the cessation of hostilities. Immediately back comes the meat, back comes the dairy, back come the strokes, and back come the heart attacks. Now we get at a point where, let's just review what we've learned so far tonight. The leading killer of women and men in Western civilization does not even exist on this planet for millions and millions of people. And it's interesting that when natural catastrophes like war take place, you can practically end this epidemic rather by two-guy, as it were. Well, now let's get into the particulars a little bit. On the right, that's kind of a nasty-looking artery. You're probably saying, when this finally closes off, there'll be a heart attack. Actually, only about 10% of heart attacks come from something this nasty. What really is going on here is that if you have a lesion like this, you're probably going to have some chest pain, you're going to have shortness of breath, but not. This is not the major cause of heart attacks. We'll get to those 90% in just a moment. But on the left, I want you to notice, this isn't a normal artery. Even those of you in the back can see this single layer of cells lining The innermost part of the artery, and all experts in this disease would agree that this layer, the endothelial layer, is the absolute life jacket and guardian of our blood vessel. However, when those of us in Cleveland and Canton are eating pizza, milkshakes, cheeseburgers, the first thing that happens is our blood flow in those cellular elements gets sticky. Our blood is flowing like Velcro rather than like Teflon. Now, if you bear with me, we'll go for a moment, even though I went to Yale, we occasionally do, not to Harvard. This is Peter Libby, who I have great respect for from Harvard. He is, obviously, the artery is cut in half, the blood is flowing up here in this blue area, and you can see these nice single-layer endothelial cells. But if we start together here on the left, up in the blood flowing, we see the nasty LDL cholesterol, which is sticky. And if it hits up against this sticky endothelium, we have migration. Migration of LDL into the sub-endothelial compartment, and notice it's no longer orange. The artist makes it all yellow because it has now been oxidized by free radicals. It exists largely a lot of it from our food. And now you have these oxidized LDL particles. The subendothelial space cannot abide that and calls upon our SWAT team, the white cells, to come from the bloodstream into the subendothelial space. And here Peter Libby from Harvard has painted the SWAT team blue in honor of Yale. And then we like that. Now, here we have this macrophage gobbling up all these nasty oxidized LDL particles. So finally we get over here, and now that particle is absolutely chock full of all these oxidized LDL particles, we now change the name as we do in medicine so often. Now it's called the foam cell. But the foam cell is truly the Darth Vader of this entire sequence that I'm sharing with you. Because if the foam cell does something that's truly nasty, the foam cell and the metalloproteinases that it produces, like stromalicin, elastase, myeloperoxidase, collagenase, what do they do that's so bad? On the left here, you see this little cap over the plaque. And the foam cell's enzymes, those metalloproteinases, erode progressively. Thin out and thin out and thin out this cap over the plaque. Notice that this one is only blocking the artery by 30 or 35%. Probably 8% of people in Canada have something like this. However, you don't get symptoms until you're at least 75% blocked. But now that the metalloproteinases and the foam cell have thinned this out, it gets so thin that finally the sheer force of blood racing over it, it tears. Now we've got this seminal moment. You have now ruptured your plaque. There is extravasation, or the oozing out of, if you will, of plaque content into the flowing blood, activates platelets, and we have a clot form. And the clot is in and of itself self-propagating. So in a matter of minutes, now we're all the way over to here, with an artery that formerly was innocuously blocked by 35%. Suddenly it's now 100% blocked. All the downstream heart muscle here is deprived of oxygen and nutrients. It starts to die. And there's 90% of your heart attacks. Now, if I do my job correctly this evening, you'll understand why it is that you've heard me in publications and elsewhere say that, as far as I'm concerned, coronary artery heart disease, the leading killer of women and men in Western civilization, is nothing more than a toothless paper tiger that need ever, ever exist. And if it does exist, it need never, ever progress. This is a completely benign, foodborne illness. Now, if this job is done correctly tonight, nobody in this room should ever have to rupture their plaque. But then the good friends that you tell him will have to rupture their plaque. Nobody else in your acquaintance will have to live up to their plan. If you do the simple thing of what? If I can get you to change your internal biochemistry, not with a pill, not with a procedure, not with a stent or a bypass, but by changing your biochemistry with the way that you eat, you will do something that is so powerful. One, you'll prevent all that stickiness from ever having developed. You'll never have a SWAT team come across into your subendothelial space. You won't have your LDL cholesterol migrate into the subendothelial space. You will defeat the foam cell. And most importantly, you will learn how to strengthen the cap over your plaque. Because once you have strengthened the cap over your plaque, it cannot rupture. And if you have made it so you cannot rupture your plaque, you have absolutely made yourself heart attack proof. Okay, I guess you got it all, but there's a little bit more. Now, here we go. Forget the x-ray. This is the plaque. This is still the open part of the artery. This is the endothelial cells, which up until 1980, we used to think of the endothelial cells as these cute little red bricks that were lining these marvelous pipes. That all changed. In 1980, Dr. Firstow, working in Brooklyn, was taking the aorta, the largest blood vessel in the lobe, putting an elliptical cut, like a spiral staircase, through the endothelium on it, immersed it in saline, and it would constrict. One day, no cut. He immersed it, whoop, it dilated. Now, globally, the race was on. What was the EDRF that Dr. Firstow had discovered? The endothelial-derived relaxation factor. Kind of rolls right off your tongue. Thank heaven that term was only with us until 1988. When Dr. Firstow, Louis Merrill, and Murad discovered it was a gas. The EDRF is nitric oxide. Those three gentlemen in 1998 got the Nobel Prize for that. All right. What is the magic of this gas, nitric oxide? What does it do? One, it prevents the cellular elements in our bloodstream from ever getting sticky. Two, it's the strongest vasodilator in the body. You climb stairs, your arteries to your heart, your arteries to your legs, widen, they dilate. Nitric oxide. Number three, nitric oxide prevents the wall of your artery from becoming thickened, stiff, or inflamed. Protects you from getting high blood pressure, hypertension. Number four, key, an adequate safe amount of nitric oxide prevents you from ever developing blockages or plaque. Number five, nitric oxide will prevent the migration of smooth muscle from the wall of the artery from migrating into the plaque. Number six, nitric oxide can destroy dark vapor, the bone cell. Now, as I look out in the far reaches of this room, I see some of you saying to yourselves, John, I wonder what my level of nitric oxide is. Well, we really don't have a way of doing it regularly in the office, but it has been measured, obviously, from a research standpoint. If you'll take an ultrasound probe and place it over the brachial artery at the elbow, you'll get a readout of the diameter of this artery. Then for 5 minutes, you will encircle your upper arm with a blood pressure cuff, which will be inflated above systolic blood pressure so that for 5 minutes, you have zero blood flow to your forearm and hand. And I've had that done. It's not exactly habit-forming. But then you release the cuff and immediately remeasure the new diameter, and the normal individual would be 30% greater because of the outpouring of nitric oxide in response to that tourniquet time. All right. Now, the next key thing that happened was Dr. Robert Vogel, who was chairman of cardiology at the University of Maryland, took a group of healthy young subjects to a certain fast food restaurant characterized by arches which are golden. Now, half of the group had the cornflakes and the lymphoproteinuria test normal. The other had the hash browns and sausages. Within 120 minutes, they couldn't dilate the artery. That single meal had so trashed, had it so injured, it had so compromised the capacity of the endothelial cell to make nitric oxide, they couldn't dilate the artery. But being young, as they followed into the late afternoon, early evening, they began to recover. But you and I know that the next morning for breakfast, it's going to be scrambled eggs and bacon. Lunchtime, we'll have cold cuts with some mayonnaise and white bread. And how about supper with baked potatoes with sour cream? Lamb chops, vegetables soaked in butter, ranch dressing on a salad, and ice cream for dessert. Here in the middle of the USA, all day long, we pound on and injure and destroy our endothelial capacity to make nitric oxide. All right. Now, usually when I go to 2 a.m., I give you the whole four. But we've talked about the endothelial cell. The endothelial progenitor cell replaces our senescent, injured, worn-out endothelial cells. HDL cholesterol is very vulnerable. From the Western diet, you really make it quite impotent and impossible to do its job. And dimethylarginine, dimethylaminohydrolase, is a key enzyme in protecting us from destroying nitric oxide. All four of these natural defense mechanisms, which are not treated today by standard cardiology, all four are absolutely optimized when you eat plant-based nutrition. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other things we're doing for this disease today, right now, because the point that I'm trying to make right now, ever since the days of Hippocrates, there's been a basic covenant of trust between the caregiver and the patient that wherever possible, the caregiver is going to share with the patient what is the causation of the illness. Sadly today, in cardiology and cardiovascular medicine, that's not being done. The cause of this disease is not lack of drugs. The cause of this disease is not lack of stents or bypasses. We've talked about the fact that the cause of this disease is certain foods that we'll discuss further. Now, what about stents and bypasses? Let me be clear. If I'm in the middle of a heart attack, the person I want right next to me is a man or woman who has a skill set in stents. They're going to save my life, and they're actually going to preserve a lot of my heart. Okay, that's 10%. What about the 90% that are getting elective stents? There have been now absolutely hundreds of studies clearly defining the fact that an elective stent does zero in terms of prolonging life or protecting from a future heart attack. And are there downsides to stents? Well, the worst is you could die, but not very often. 1%. If you do 1.2 million, that's 12,000 die. 1% get a heart attack, 48,000 heart attacks. How about bypasses? Mortality is a little higher, 3%, don't do as many, 500,000. So there's 15,000 who will die getting bypasses this year, and another 3%, 15,000 getting a stroke. Take it over 10 years. 270,000, quarter of a million, will lose their lives from these procedures. 480,000, half a million heart attacks, 150,000 strokes. Now, the interesting thing is right now, this nation is being pulled into debtor's prison faster than anything you can imagine because of the entitlements, Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. What is 45%? Medicare, cardiovascular medicine, your first stent, your second stent, your fourth or fifth stent, and you have to have a bypass. Some more stents to keep the bypass open. And then congestive heart failure. And then you die of a completely benign foodborne illness that never had its causation treated. We can do better. And the exciting thing is, there's Walter Willett, a
who happens to be the chairman of public health at Harvard. The current path leads to increasing adiposity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and disability. And an unfit, socially isolated population stuck with pills and subjected to frequent palliative procedures. I want to share with you now two studies that I got involved in. The first one is a small study because back in 1985 when I started, I was still actively involved as a surgeon at the clinic and I had my surgical responsibilities, but I was able to persuade cardiology to give me 24 patients who were seriously ill with heart disease. They failed their first or second bypass. They failed their first or second angioplasty. They were too sick for these procedures or they had refused. Five were told they wouldn't live out the year. I had to say those five all made it beyond 20 years. And the absolute key here was I didn't want them to have anything ever pass their lips that was further going to denigrate, injure, destroy their endothelial cells, which had already been so destroyed they had the disease. Because the exciting thing is this is not a malignancy. And the endothelial cells will come back really very rapidly. So, they don't get not one drop of any kind of oil. Olive oil, corn oil, soybean oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil, coconut oil, palm oil. Oil in a cracker. Oil in bread. Oil in a salad dressing. Oil injures the endothelial cells. Nothing with a mother or a face. Meat, fish, chicken, fowl, turkey, and no dairy. Milk, cream, butter, cheese, ice cream, and yogurt. All those things destroy endothelial cells. Add those sugar, especially in excess. Maple syrup, molasses, and honey. Caffeine and coffee. Caffeine and tea is okay. Caffeine and coffee injures endothelial cells. Those of you who are excited about what I said with hot boil, here's a peer-reviewed medical article. Olive, soybean, and palm oil intake have a similar acute detrimental effect over the endothelial function of healthy young subjects. Now, why am I so adamant about eating living things, animal protein? This is work that came out of the clinic the last couple of years by Stan Hazen and his team in molecular biology. They were looking at people who were omnivores, anybody who's eating meat and dairy and fish, okay? They were specifically looking at how these omnivores metabolize lecithin and carnitine, because omnivores contain in their microbiota, in their gut, bacteria which have the capacity to turn the lecithin and carnitine into TMA, trimethylamine, which is oxidized by our liver into trimethylamine oxide, which is very unpleasant and injures vascular tissue. The exciting thing is, as part of their research, they took people who were totally plant-based, gave them a piece of lamb chop, measured their blood, no TMAO. Why? Because if you are eating totally plant-based, you do not contain the intestinal bacterial flora that enable you to make this. It is an absolute fantastic validation of the whole plant-based approach to protect people from developing cardiovascular disease. So what are you going to eat? All these wonderful whole grains through the cereal bread and pasta, 101 different types of legumes, all those red, yellow, and green leafy vegetables and some fruit. And I would be remiss if I didn't confess to you that I have a reputation as a bit of a taskmaster. Not as mean as I look, but I'm very greedy for my patients and I'm very competitive and I want them to succeed. So here's another little wrinkle that is actually not in my book, which was published in 2007. Now, if somebody comes to us with angina, with chest pain, or with cardiac disease, but especially those who have angina, it really is so exciting to absolutely get these people to become empowered as the locus of control to destroy this crippling pain that they get every time they may exert themselves. So bear with me for a moment. If you could somehow get your head inside your artery of somebody who had plaque and blockage, you would see that that plaque and blockage is an absolute cauldron, a cauldron of oxidative inflammation. So I need antioxidants. No. Do not go down to the health food store and buy a jug of pills that says antioxidant. It doesn't work. It's going to be harmful. I want you to get your antioxidants from food, okay? What food? Food that is high in ORAC value. O-R-A-C. Oxygen radical absorptive capacity. So, for example, blueberries, raspberries, and strawberries on your cereal, terrific. But nothing can trump the green leafy vegetable antioxidant capacity. So I'm asking these patients with angina, 6 times a day, I want them to chew, never smoothies, never juice. I want them to chew green leafy vegetable that had been cooked in boiling water 5.5 to 6 minutes so it's nice and tender. Then they can anoint it with some lemon drops or perhaps a delightful balsamic vinegar. Chew that alongside your cereal. Again, as a mid-morning snack, obviously with your luncheon sandwich. Again, as a mid-afternoon snack. Yes, at dinner time. God, I adore it when you have that evening snack of kale. What are you doing? You are pouring these absolutely powerful antioxidants all day long. You are pouring it over this cauldron of oxidative inflammation. And it is so exciting when you see it sometimes within 4 to 6 days, these people say, my God, my angina has disappeared. You have, and then you've got them both. They are absolutely both. Now, what are the green leafy vegetables that I'm talking about? Bok choy, Swiss chard, kale, collard green, beet greens, mustard greens, turnip greens, rabbit cabbage, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, cilantro, parsley, spinach, and arugula, and asparagus. Okay. Now, yes, I have done that before. No oil! Alright, this group started with a cholesterol of 237 and over 5 and 12 years they kept their total under 150 and their LDL right around 80, which we wanted. I'm going to show you now several angiograms that showed disease reversal. All these angiograms were reviewed in the Cleveland Clinic Angiography Core Laboratory by senior medical technicians who, in triplicate, who do this all day long for national medical trials. So when I give you a certain percent of reversal, I know that it's accurate. This first is a 67-year-old retired pediatrician. And you're looking at a 10%, which is as small as the eye can see, improvement in the left anterior descending from here over to here. A little easier to see in this 58-year-old factory worker. And this happens to be the circumflex artery to the back of the heart. This is described as a 20% widening from here to here. There is a 54-year-old retired security guard, the right coronary artery. This was described as a 30% improvement from here to here. Now, this young man, 1996, replaced me as chairman of the Breast Cancer Task Force, Joe Cook. He's in the first chapter of my book. And Joe, at age 44, in the summer of 1996, began getting chest pain. Not a smoker, not diabetic, not hypertensive, cholesterol 156, no family history. He exercised regularly. Chest pain. Cardiologist worked him up in October of 96. Found nothing. The third week in November of 96, he was finishing his surgical schedule, sat down to write orthogonal motors, immediately this crushing chest pain, jaw, left shoulder, arm, ripped out the cath lab, cardiac arrest, resuscitated, finished the catheterization, another cardiac arrest, resuscitated, and then he was taken up to his room and discharged 3 days later, but very depressed. Why? He was depressed because at the time of his catheterization, The lower one-third of his left anterior descending artery was all moth-eaten and diseased over too long a segment to permit any stents. Too far down the artery for a bypass. So he was depressed about this. So 2 weeks later, Ed and I had Joe and his wife out for supper. Come on, Joe. You've been eating this absolutely hideous American diet. You've got the usual pathology. Why don't you think about going plant-based? We've got 10 years of data. Okay, yes, I'll give it a shot. They couldn't offer me anything else. But I'm not going to take any of those statin drugs. I don't trust them. I think there are too many side effects. Fine, that's your call, not a problem. He became the absolute personification of commitment to plant-based nutrition. And over the next 2.5 years, his LDL, bad cholesterol, went from 98 down to 38. And then he had another angiogram. Now, in the surgical suite area where the offices are, our offices are 3 doors apart. So at noontime on the day that I knew earlier that morning that Joe had had his follow-up angiogram, I found myself in front of his door and I opened it, and there he was, sitting at his desk. Joe, I understand you had the old follow-up angiogram earlier this morning. Mike sharing with me, how did it go? He got up from his desk, came around, put his arms around me, a couple of these. He said, I think we're doing okay. And I said, well, did you think there any chance that I could see the angiogram? He said, yeah. Now, when your plaque is young and it is not filled with scar, calcification, fibrosis, and the plaque is made up of inflammation and fat and cholesterol, you can see occasionally these kinds of striking results. How often? Depending upon the age of the patient, the age of the plaque, maybe a third or a quarter of patients. But never fear. Even in those patients who are in their 50s and 60s and 70s, where you know the plaque is never going to budge, those patients also will absolutely get rid of their symptoms and get back to full activity of daily living without any increment of problems. And I want to share with you tonight the 6 ways that we think of as disease reversal. This is the one that's kind of jazzy and exciting. Now, despite my sparkling personality, there were 6 of these original 24 nice guys. But I knew within the first month or two they just didn't get it. I had no money for this study, so I returned them full-time with their blessing to their expert cardiologist. And over the next 12 years, 2 of them died, the other 4 had to have another bypass. On the other hand, the 18 that stayed with us in that original study, we wanted to know how many cardiac events they'd had in the 8 years prior to coming into our study while we were in the hands of expert cardiologists. And they had these 49 different events among these 18. These different events of worsening disease that you see listed here. However, after those 18 were with us at 12 years, 17 of the 18 had no further cardiac events. We did have one little sheep wandered from the flock at 6 years, right into the lamb chops, the burgers, glazed donuts, and had chest pain, had to have the bypass, but it proves the point that I'm trying to share with you tonight. Now, rightfully so, the scientific community they were very nice about, okay, sure, you proved the point in this small group of patients. This was not, you know, thousands. And we were criticized because it was felt that you could not do this with a larger group, or can you do it with a larger group, and will the results be the same? So, just this past July, publishing in the Journal of Family Practice, we added another 200, which I share with you tonight. And it was exciting for us to know that roughly almost 90% of these patients were adherent, 177 out of 198. And that was close to 90%. And that is, although we're kind of happy about it. I'm greedy and I'd like it to be around 98%. But how do we get to 90%? And I'll tell you, when are you going to do a lifestyle change? Especially dealing with something that's food. Next to religion and sex, there's nothing as personal as food. So how do you get these people to make this behavior change? I'm convinced that the way you have to do it is you've got to show these patients respect. How do you show a patient respect? You give them your time. So, since 85% of our patients are coming outside of the state of Ohio, we know they cannot come to Cleveland for days at a time. So 13 years ago, we synthesized a very intensive single-day, 5.5-hour counseling seminar. We insist whenever possible that they bring their spouse or significant other. Both parties have to know how this is done. And I'm compulsive enough that I should share with you. 2 weeks before we have our monthly intensive seminar, my secretary will give me a list of those who are attending, usually no more than 10 or 12, but I have limited to that, which is a powerful number. And I then personally call every one of those people because I insist on getting my arms around their shoulder and also having them have an opportunity to ask questions of me so that coming to the seminar, we have a strong platform from which we can all move forward. And how do you know these people were sick? 119 had already had a bypass or a stent. We found that 27 of them were told they were going to have a bypass or stent. After going through our program, that was not required. And the non-adherent, 62% have recurrent disease, but those of who are adherent, 0.6%. Let's take a bar graph. What you're seeing here on the left, here are the cardiac index of heart attack, stroke, and death. Over here we have the world-famous long Mediterranean study out of France, 25%. Per year, heart attack, stroke, or death. Natural history of heart disease, Columbia Presbyterian in New York, 20%. No bones, well known, Carrara study, 19%. So up around 21-22%. Then bingo, here we are, 0.6%, almost a 35-fold difference. We had no deaths, and no heart attacks in that group. We had one mild stroke. What's going on here? It's simple. We are treating the causation of the illness. Yeah. All right, that wasn't enough. So here was the other study we published also in July. And the reason I chose these three patients and published it in sort of a Waiver Journal is I wanted to make a point. These were three wonderful patients, one with carotid disease, one with disease to the coronary arteries to the heart, the other with disease in the legs. All of these, three of these, went through the classic cardiovascular medicine procedures and were then told, when they all failed, there was nothing further to be done. The first came from Newfoundland, Canada. I never met him. He had his first carotid completely blocked at age 42. By the age of 70, his remaining left one was 97% blocked. And he thought this was curtains. The thing that happened that helped him was his daughter, who was 37, had a heart attack. Found our book and said, "Dad, we got to do this." They did, and over the next year, his blockage reduced itself from 97% to 67%. And that, he wrote me a letter and said, "I'm so involved with living, I no longer think about dying." He lost 40 pounds, lost his diabetes, and restored his, had no longer any erectile dysfunction. This other gentleman actually was treated a little closer to home, and he was treated at a place called the Cleveland Clinic. And he had 14 stents. Those didn't work. So he had a bypass. That didn't work. So he had more stents. That didn't work. And they told nothing further to be done. And he found a fellow parishioner, came our way, lost 40 pounds, lost diabetes, no longer has any angina. And he is one of the folks who appears on a regular basis at part of the presentation at our monthly seminar. The other gentleman, who also was treated at the clinic, found that his leg had four operations, they all failed, nothing further to be done, lost 35 pounds, now can walk nonstop. So, the exciting thing is, compared to what we saw earlier, if you're eating plant-based, there's no mortality from the diet, there's no morbidity from the diet, there's no added expense, because you've got to eat. And all that happens with the passage of time is that you continue to improve. And today, most patients who have cardiovascular disease are really walking around with a sword of Damocles hanging over their head, wondering when the other heart attack will come. Nonsense! Think of how exciting it is for these people to realize that they themselves have now been empowered as the locus of control to absolutely annihilate their disease. But what in the world is the good of having a great heart if your brain goes on you? By the time you're 85 in this country or Sweden, you've got dementia in 50%. Not a great trade-off. Okay, we've really got some insight into this when Megan Leary and her team from the West Coast in 2001, reporting at the stroke meeting in Miami, looked at over 5,500 MRIs of the brains of Americans. Here's a normal one. What did they see? At age 50, Americans begin to get these little tiny white spots in their MRI, which we now know are little strokes. Anybody here over 50? But, tiny, big brain, tiny little stroke, not a problem. Well, that is until you're 65, and now you find yourself more often than before saying, sweetheart, we're diabetes of car keys. You get over that. But now you're 75. You've had 10 more years of the good old American diet. You find yourself saying, sweetheart, we're diabetes of car. All right, she helps you with that. Now you're 85. Look at her. Are you my sweetheart? I can't reverse that. You don't suddenly wake up on your 85th birthday with dementia. You work hard in all those preceding decades to lay the foundation for that challenge. Okay, here it is. I counted 90 of these little strokes. Can you imagine a neuronal message trying to go through all that scar? Okay. Now here, on the left, you see the skull, and the brain is right out to the edge of the skull. However, as we get more senior, in some of us there's a fair amount of brain atrophy. And look at here, almost an inch between the brain and the skull. You don't want brain atrophy. How do you stop from getting brain atrophy? You exercise. You're going to do it with walking. You got to do it 4 or 5 times a week, fast enough so you're almost ready to break a sweat. Or you can bicycle, or you can swim. But exercise is key for 2 areas: the hippocampus, the memory, the frontal lobe, for executive thinking. Key. Now, on the other hand, here you see the importance of exercise. For the 40-year-old triathlete, look at the MRI of his thigh muscle. Here is the thigh muscle of a 74-year-old couch potato. Here is the thigh muscle down here on the lower right of a 70-year-old triathlete. So you can hold on to it. Kind of key. Now, we talked about the brain, we talked about the heart. Quickly, the leg. Coming to my office, in the original group, this gentleman had to stop 5 times because of severe claudication or pain in his right calf muscle because he had a partially blocked artery in his thigh. So I sent him down to the vascular lab, and he had this pulse volume on the left that you see. I forgot all about his leg. 11 months later, he said, Dr. Esselstyn, you recall when I first started coming to see you, I had to stop 5 times crossing the skyway. Yeah. Said, this last month, it got to be 4 times, 3, 2, 1. He said, I'm not stopping anymore. No more pain. Don, back you go to the vascular lab. Here it is. Bingo. Double. Now, this was a eureka moment for us. Why? Because we had absolutely rock-solid scientific data that food and food alone had brought back this man's circulation. And you're going to say, well, what about his statin drug? Look, guys, in 1986, we didn't have any statin drugs. So with those of you who are into this and understand that some people simply can't take the statins, there are too many side effects, they are not at all thrown on the ash heap. Because you can do this with food and food alone, as the millions of other people on this planet are doing. Here's another thing. This happens to be a 78-year-old retired high school chemistry teacher, and in his retirement, he and his wife love to do these fast square dances. But he was getting bilateral pain in his calf because he had this terrible circulation that you see here. When he saw these vascular surgeons, they got this imaging of his vascular system. And he was not excited about the surgical procedure that they suggested. Found this over the internet, and when he came, he said, Dr. Esselstyn, if I choose your method, how long will it take me to get rid of my calf pain? So I looked at him with great wisdom in my face. And I said, probably about 10 or 11 months. 3 months later, I got a phone call. Dr. Esselstyn, you do not speak the truth. The pain is gone. So, now, I don't know what it's like in camp, but when you're watching an athletic event in Cleveland, or you're watching a mystery, before the advertisement comes on, you will hear the mellifluous tones of the announcer say something like, when the moment is right, will you be ready? Now, we all know that the penile artery is really quite tiny compared to the coronary artery, so not infrequently before somebody comes down with heart disease, they may find they're no longer able to raise the flag. However, all is not lost. Not infrequently, 11 or 12 months after I've counseled somebody, I'll get a phone call. Dr. Esselstyn, yes. This is Mr. So-and-so. Sure enough. Yeah, I said, you know, I thought I'd rather give you a call because recently something has come up. And I'm wondering if I don't owe you another check. Now, back to the heart. Here, on the left, what you're seeing is a PET rubidium diacrinimal scan of the heart. That is to say, if it's orange or yellow, that's good. Here where it's green, that's lousy, there's poor perfusion. This was in a 60-year-old stockbroker who had a cholesterol of 248. We counted him the same day. 10 days later, cholesterol was 137. 3 weeks later, bingo. We repeated it, it's all back. Now look, this is another way of reversal. We, just like another one, which is stress test. When you see the stress test, absolutely reverse. Here what's happened is, we know we didn't wash out the plaque in 3 weeks. Why is it so much better? And here's the answer. Here's a heart with all the muscle gone. You know, here up here, we have the main arteries. We get them 60, 70, 80, 90% blocked. We've had some patients with two of them 100% blocked, 80% of the other. They get after this. Everybody's a little different. And they absolutely, why is it they get well? Because when we see them, although the disease that the cardiologist sees is a plaque in that artery, all of these are diseased. They aren't filled with plaque, but they are all absolutely been destroyed in terms of their endothelial capacity to make nitric oxide. So as soon as they get it and they stop injury to the endothelial cells, all this miles and miles of endothelial cells suddenly revive, start pouring out nitric oxide, which is the strongest vasodilator in the body. And also, they stop making. The endothelial cell, when you injure it, makes a vasoconstrictor, endothelin and thromboxane. Get rid of the endothelin and thromboxane, make the nitric oxide, and then suddenly, everything starts to dilate. And as you recall, In physics, Poincaré's law of strokes of the hollow discus is related to the fourth power of the radius of translation. Tiny increase in diameter, huge increase in flow. And that's how it seems to happen. And now, here I am. This will be the 15th year that I've retired from surgery. And I find myself more passionate than ever about the field of medicine. And the reason is because I'm convinced that medicine is absolutely on the cusp of what could truly be a seismic revolution. And this seismic revolution is never going to come about from the invention of another pill, from the invention of another procedure or another operation. No. The seismic revolution will come about when those of us in the healing profession have the will and the grit and the determination to share with the public the opportunity to understand nutritional literacy so they can be empowered to eliminate not just heart disease. Because when you go plant-based, you get rid of heart disease, you get rid of strokes, you get rid of obesity, you get rid of diabetes, hypertension, diminish the common Western cancers of breast, prostate, and colon, get rid of lupus, the autoimmune diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, perhaps even MS, certainly GERD, asthma, osteoporosis, and the list goes on and on and on. Because as long as we continue to eat this absolutely horrible Western diet, every time we sustain an injury when we eat these foods, that injury, our bodies are so remarkable, they will heal it 90%. But you've taken a 10% hit. Think about somebody who what? No hypertension when they're a teenager. No hypertension when they're in their 20s. Now in their 30s, suddenly the doctor says, you know, a little high blood pressure here, we ought to give you a drug. What the hell, give him a drug? Change the way why he's getting his hypertension. Get him not to get his arteries stiff and inflamed and thickened. Nope. Okay, gets a little worse. Now by 45, we're on two drugs for hypertension. And also the blood sugar is getting up there a little bit. This is just crazy. This crazy. And we can't just do it at the end of life when these things happen. We somehow got to get this into schools so we don't have to struggle with people in their middle years. Here are an example of a couple. This can be done nationally. Sweden in 1972. Finland in 1972 was the heart attack capital of the world. They were so embarrassed by this, they really went after it, stopped them, these guys from smoking, got rid of all their animal fats. In 30 years, they dropped their cardiac disease rates by 85%. Impressive. Here's a friend of mine from Lakewood. Dave Schumann gave me this slide. This man had diabetes. Here he finally got him to go plant-based. Immediately, his blood sugars start plummeting. We see this all the time in patients of ours who are diabetic. We have to alert them to the fact that they're going to have to start shaving back their diabetic medications because of how rapidly this resolves. Here's another one of these patients who had osteoporosis. This woman was thriving on meat and dairy. Normal urinary calcium should be here in this blue band. Here she is literally peeing away her bones until Dave got you to go plant-based. Within 1 week, the urinary calcium is now normal. Now, actually, this is so nobody dares ask me about where you get your protein. This actually is Joe Bonino, 1921 strongman in Cornell, totally plant-based. He and his mom from the old country. And this is Joe Rodino at age 103.
Wow.
Now, just so you know, this is where building where I worked for all those years that I was a surgeon on the 8th floor. But I wanted to show you in Canton what the trees look like in Cleveland in February. However, now that I've been involved with the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute. The budget is more modest, but the morale is really quite high. And there's one thing that I've learned in the last 53 years since I left medical school. While brains are important, there is nothing is as important as persistence. Best exemplified by this young damsel, Life magazine, 1939, trying to learn how to do the splits. But she stuck with it. The other day, downtown Canton, Ohio, Mike Wink, this is Mike Wink, sees her, spotted her, and she got it right. Now, in summary, let me say again that I have nothing but great admiration and respect for our cardiovascular colleagues, and I have said before, I think the best can be even better. Unfortunately, the way cardiovascular medicine is practiced today, they cannot cure patients, it will never end the epidemic, and it is absolutely financially unsustainable, even in this wealthiest of countries. On number two, it's absolutely a mistaken belief to say that patients will not make this change. It's not that the message is wrong. It is how the message is articulated. Mark number three. I think it's unfair of me to ask my cardiovascular colleagues to shoulder the burden of this lifestyle transition. They have busy schedules. They not have the passion for this. Certainly they have no training in nutrition or in behavior modification. But rather, those of us in lifestyle medicine welcome the opportunity to work synergistically in the spirit of cooperative endeavor with our cardiovascular colleagues to empower their patients to absolutely become the locus of control to destroy this disease. And finally, in my opinion, it is absolutely unconscionable not to mention this option for patients. And lastly, I'd like to say that I think on the horizon there is some exciting good news. Last July, President-elect of the American College of Cardiology is Kim Williams. Kim Williams is a wonderful cardiologist from Rush Presbyterian Hospital in Chicago. He has been a plant-based nutrition eater for probably 6 years, and he made it very clear. He said that our goal as cardiologists has to be try to put ourselves out of business. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Esselstyn. He has agreed to take a couple questions. We don't have a microphone to circulate around, so maybe if you want to ask a question, come up, or if you can talk real loud, just stand up and fire it out. All right, Dave.
Have you had any success in treating type 1 diabetes?
The question was, have we had any success in treating type 1 diabetes? Well, as you know, type 1 diabetics don't have any insulin. But what has been very characteristic of those that we have treated is that their diabetic medication requirements will be reduced. Yes?
Is there an age where reversal is not going to happen or would be so slow that clinically there would be no impact?
My oldest patient is 92. I wanted to say, in terms of the unique audience that I have tonight, you should know that one of the things that we really are counting on, those who work in the mouth and the teeth, we know that when patients have periodontal disease, it takes its toll on their endothelial cell capacity to make nitric oxide. So it's another good reason to see the dentist and to floss and to take regular care of have your teeth cleaned to protect yourself from periodontal disease. And the other thing that we think is important to protect yourself from is sleep apnea. Both of those can adversely impact Ambassador Hill.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Your concern was that when I said boiling them, that I'm going to destroy the nutrients. No, that doesn't seem to happen. As a matter of fact, there is some data to suggest that actually when we heat and cook, you actually release certain phytonutrients that otherwise would not be there if you're eating raw. But I have nothing wrong with your eating it raw, but I mean, that takes Hercules. I mean, it's so delicious when you cook these and anoint them. But I mean, if you're going to get me to eat raw beet greens, I'm not there yet. I like them cooked.
Why not juicy?
Why not juicy? I have no problem with you eating an orange or an apple. I think it's great. If you're going to have orange juice or apple juice, we got a problem. It's always, when you eat an orange or an apple, the juice is bound to the fiber, okay? And the absorption is safe and slow. When you juice, or you get orange juice or apple juice, now it is no longer tied to the fiber. When it hits your stomach, it's like a rocket going off. And that injures the liver, glycates protein, and injures the endothelial cell. Now, you know, some people have said, by now you probably recognize that I'm an enormous threat to medicine's biggest cash cow. Some people have said, Dr. Esselstyn, don't you think your diet is a little bit extreme, severe, strict, or draconian? And my reply is this. Look, I am not asking you to eat any food that you haven't already had throughout the earlier part of your life. Nothing strange. These are all foods you've eaten before. But I am asking you to think about stopping eating the food that we now know, through science, absolutely is going to destroy you and make you ill. I will give you an example. I was lecturing to the Texas Academy of Family Practice, the Western Division. I did the Eastern Division first, but the Western Division gave me this question. After I was through, a 38-year-old family practitioner came up and said, you know, I think you're right. Nice that you get those results, but don't you think that's pretty extreme, severe, strict, draconian, and so forth? I said, well, let's do this. He said, wait a minute. And also, he said, I'm 38. I don't have any disease. Why should I do this? Why can't I do what I want on the weekends? Let's take the severe one first. I said, you're going to be transplanted to Okinawa, and you're not talking to the Okinawa, and you're telling him, God, your diet is just like Dr. Essel's diet. This is pretty damn severe. And the Okinawan said, wait a minute. We've been doing this for, you know, about 900 years. And we seem to have the greatest number of people who reach the age of 100. And we never seem to have those diseases that you get over there. As a matter of fact, he said, now that you brought it up, I should share with you that those of us in Okinawa think that the most severe, strict, and extreme diet is that the one that is absolutely destroying your country, where you have such an absolute wealth of illness that you can't even pay for it. That's the diet that we think is the most extreme. So then he said, why? What about myself? Why shouldn't I eat do what I want on the weekends? I said, that's fine. So let's look at it this way. You've heard what I said about the endothelial cells. You're asking me if 104 days, 2 days on a weekend, 104 days out of 365, you want to continue to trash, destroy, and injure your endothelial cells. End of story. All right, well, yes, sir.
When patients need to take warfarin for, say, bowel repair, it's a difficult dancing with the foods.
Now, the question is, what do you do with patients who have atrial fibrillation or are on warfarin and they have to have their blood checked every week? You work it out with your physician and say, look, I am not going to be deprived of the healthiest foods on the planet. And I'm going to work with you, and you're going to adjust the dose that I need to keep the INR in the range that is necessary. And I will be faithful and continue to eat regularly the same amount of green leafy vegetables. That works. Yes.
Could you tell us about your books?
Oh, thank you. There's not much to say about the book except that the green eating vegetables are not in it because we've developed that in the last 4 or 5 years. But the book really is a practical way of guiding patients first to get into this and to give them the background and the science, hopefully in a way that they can appreciate and understand and not feel threatened. Because, look, there's the reason in our book, and my wife and my daughter just wrote a book called The Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease Cookbook. So those two books have 230 recipes. Eating has to be an absolutely wonderful, enjoyable experience. So in none of our books will you ever see the amount of protein, fat, and carbohydrate, and you will never see calories. All right? Because when you eat the foods that we've talked about, the only food that is really high in caloric density are the grains. And for people who therefore have a weight issue, we ask them to stop eating flour, pasta, bread, rolls, and bagels. They can have a grain, but be modest with it. Weight will never be a problem. And when you eat out is a challenge. And there are 3 reasons to eat out. 1, you don't have to do the dishes. 2, the ambience. 3, the companionship. Now, every now and then I'll have patients who will tell me, Dr. Esselstyn, I couldn't swear that there wasn't some oil in one of those things. Wait a minute. Did you do what I told you to do? When you first sit down and the waiter or the waitress comes up, you turn in your chair, take your glasses off, look them squarely in the eye, and say, you have to understand that I am deathly allergic to a single drop of any oil. It works. Well, my father used to always say, or my grandfather used to say, you sure you believe what you're most welcome. Thank you so much.